Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, where we talk all things Magic the Gathering. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay, Sean.
Excellent.
Cold.
Cold indeed. We got some frosty mornings out here in Fresno, scraping some ice off the windshields. Just an all-around...
Pretty much.
All-around good time. Yeah.
That's what we're getting out here in Concord, too.
Yeah, get that car running for a good, like, 15 minutes before it actually starts to defrost.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, you know, it isn't cold and can actually keep you very, very warm.
Burning magic cards?
Burning? I was going to say the warmth and comfort of ordering products from Flipside Gaming off of flipsidegaming.com, Every order you make of $10 or more, whether it's singles or sealed product, you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off of your purchase, which will help contribute to fund future show giveaways.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking about.
That's a pretty warm thing.
Warmed my heart right up.
It grew 10 times this day.
All right. Okay. Well, Greg, we've promised our listeners this for a couple weeks now, and we're finally getting around to it just in time for Christmas. So our Christmas present to you, our listeners, is we are finally going to go through the lore and story of everyone's favorite golem. Yes, it's Karn.
You mean artificial planeswalker?
Yes, planeswalker, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. So why don't we head over to Lore Corner. So just to summarize in the very, very beginning, Karn is a golem, and he was actually created by Urza and Baron on Talaria to assist with their time-traveling experiments.
Mm-hmm. Why were they time traveling?
Well, you should probably check out our other story about Teferi a couple episodes ago to shed some light on that one. But based on Urza's studies, he found that only silver can pass through these temporal rifts unharmed. So he decided to construct a fully sentient golem to send him through and right the wrongs that ended up destroying the Talarian Academy, a la the original Phyrexian invasion. But we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Greg, why don't you take us through where Karn came from?
Starting at the Talarian Academy, we have Karn getting activated by Urza and Baron. Urza entrusts him to Teferi, our lovable yet
mischievous
student at the Talarian Academy. He was supposed to teach Karn about the world, and of course Karn's just a big old toy to him, so he just harassed him and didn't do anything to help him out. So ultimately Joyra saw this and was like, this is not okay, I'm gonna take care of Artie Shovelhead. Yes, that was Teferi's name for him, was Artie Shovelhead. Such rude. So Joyra gave him the name Karn, which was a Thran word for mighty, which of course is just a preliminary to what everything happened there on Talaria, because the Thran pretty much did everything there.
Right.
So he had an idyllic sort of life. It was great. And then tragedy struck when a sleeper agent killed Joyra, which was, of course, his friend. Biggest friend. She was small, but big. And so he goes and travels through time to right that wrong. But in doing so, the time machine gets destroyed. Well, it completely destroys all of Talaria. And Karn kind of leaves for some time because he couldn't handle what happened. Well, what he came back to find out is that Joyra and Teferi were trapped in the time bubbles. And
Joyra was still alive. Teferi was trapped in the time bubble.
I thought she was trapped in a fast time bubble but got out.
No, remember when Teferi came out of his time bubble, he saw that everyone had aged 20 years except for him, which kind of made him a little sad, but yeah.
That's right. Then Karn gets sidelined by Urza because he was working on a bunch of other stuff. So Karn was like, okay, well, we'll go work on the mana rig because, of course, he likes working with Joyra. He allowed himself to be used as a bargaining chip with the Viashino and even on the Skyship Weatherlight's first trip to Sarah's Realm. Then Joyra left Talaria. She decided to live in Shiv and run the mana rig with the fairy, and Karn missed her terribly, falling into a deep depression, which was consuming him. So essentially what he did is he started joining the Weatherlight on its voyages around the world to try and help them out and make things better. And Baron started seeing a lot of problems with the Golem's mental health. I mean, he was pretty depressed because even though he was doing all sorts of great things all over Talaria, they just kept reminding him of Joyra and Teferi. So Urza decided, after Baron asked him extensively, to put a cap on Karn's memories so he could only remember about the past 20 years of his life. The only thing that he did not wish to forget was Joyra. So every night he would stay awake and repeat the mantra, Joyra is my friend.
How sad. Yeah. I mean, great for eliminating all those horrible, nasty memories, but the fact that he had to actually do that, what a poor guy. And you know what? It really doesn't get any better.
No, it doesn't.
No. Karn has a very sad story, but we press on here. So Urza decided that the Weatherlight, the flying ship Weatherlight, Karn, and all other artifacts that he built and collected over the years to further his own quests against Phyrexia, collectively all these things put together known as the Legacy, they needed a human component to wield them. So he set about, you know, tracing some of these Dominarian bloodlines, hence the Bloodlines Project, trying to breed the perfect hero. So ultimately, he came upon the Capuchin bloodline, and he put Karn in charge of taking care of the Capuchin bloodline. Because, you know, Karn is a gigantic silver golem, and though he does get depressed sometimes, he is a force to be reckoned with physically. So the golem, Karn, rescued Gerard Capuchin, a young Gerard Capuchin, from the Phyrexian raids on Benalia, and brought him to his adopted father, Sidar Kondo, one of the partner commanders from one of the recent commander sets.
He is also in Vanguard.
Ooh, there you go. Nice. Lore. It's amazing. So, Kondo had a son named Vuel. And in a later story, we can tell you how Vuel turns evil. But anyway, when he turned against his tribe and stole the legacy, Karn went to retrieve it. During his effort, he was tricked into killing an innocent bystander and was frozen by the touchstone. And he was later found and freed by Captain Sisse, with the memory of killing the innocent flesh in his mind. So Karn, again, has these memories that he has a very hard time dealing with. Karn took a vow of pacifism, like the card, swearing never again to take a life, which is unfortunate because he is a hulking mass of silver that is capable of pummeling things into tiny little bits.
Don't forget, metal muscles.
Metal muscles, indeed. Yeah. So during the Weatherlight's time on Wrath, Karn was captured by Graven Ilvek, who is another just real nasty guy. But he refused to fight off his attackers, thanks to his vow of pacifism. He was taken to Volrath's stronghold. So Vuel, Kondo's son, ends up turning evil and becomes known as Volrath. So here we have Volrath's stronghold. There, he was tortured, being put into a room that would incessantly tumble end over end. Now, he's a pacifist, and he doesn't want to hurt anybody or kill anything. So what do? They start shipping an endless supply of Mogs, living goblins, into this tumbling chamber. in which he was forced to fall onto and crush these goblins, killing them, until he was finally rescued by Gerard. Talk about scarring. Man. So as the crew of the Weatherlight fled the stronghold, Karn knew he had a mission separate from all the others and went to seek the legacy artifacts guarded by the Sliver Queen. By explaining to the hive mind Sliver Queen that the legacy was part of him, Karn actually was able to convince the Sliver Queen to let him take the artifacts and depart in peace. That's pretty persuasive. I mean, the Sliver Queen seems pretty nasty, but, you know, Karn does what Karn does.
All right, so, after dealing with the Sliver Queen, there was the Phyrexian invasion, which Karn confronted Sabo Sobek in the Caves of Koyos. And he realized that his vow of pacifism, which kept him from protecting his friends and his homeworld, was a problem. So, still torn by desire to protect and his vow, he was struck upon his head, and the cap on his memories was broken. They all came rushing back to him, vividly remind him of the Phyrexians that he killed to protect Joyra. After that, he became instrumental in killing Sabo Sobek. And he enjoyed the celebrations, as many other person did that night. Although they were short-lived, since the Overlay was going to start in the morning, which was the Wrathy Overlay, if you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. You can find that in our story of Yawgmoth many episodes ago.
Yeah. So, even though he had a newfound willingness to kill, he spent majority of his time in Weatherlight's engine core guiding the ship to improve itself and become better with the legacy. After some time and the near destruction of it, he fully understood the Thran Tome. With that knowledge, he was able to help trigger the Weatherlight's final evolution. He was surprised by the fact that he was not the only intelligence running the ship. And to his joy, and despite the dire circumstance, he found somebody who could understand him completely.
So he was talking to the ship.
Yep. Whew. But of course, it was not to be, as Yawgmoth manifested himself in Dominaria, and the ship gave its life to try and slay Yawgmoth. At this time, Karn was united with Urza and Gerard when Gerard put Urza's Power Stone Eyes, the Might Stone and the Meek Stone, as heard of in other stories, into Karn. At that point, the Legacy released a wave of white mana, destroying the Phyrexians and slaying Yawgmoth. Along with it, Gerard and Urza were killed too. And then this is when Karn's spark ignited to become the first and only artificial planeswalker. Dun, dun, dun.
See, it's the Might Stone and the Weak Stone.
Meek.
It says Weak Stone.
Oh, it is Weak Stone. I apologize. Might Stone and Weak Stone, which were found by Urza and Mishra in the Caves of Koyos back way, way before everything.
Right. And was it, I'm not 100% sure here, but was it Urza's plan kind of to keep them safe or keep them to himself by replacing his eyes with them?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Man.
Well, eventually what it was is his brother had lost the Weak Stone and he had taken the Might Stone. And they later became their eyes, each of them. But when Mishra was finally fully completed and Urza killed him, he took the Weak Stone and put it into his eyes, thus giving him the power of both.
That's right. And upon just a little deeper look here, the Might Stone and the Weak Stone were both halves of a Thran Power Stone that Dyfed cracked open to open a permanent portal between Dominaria and Phyrexia.
Yep.
Whew. We may have to cover that in a future episode.
I mean, there's an entire book cycle that goes over that. There's three of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot.
Yep. And we do our best to bring to you what's the best word to describe it?
Origination of the Phyrexian Menace?
I was going to say more so the Cliff Notes version of the entire lore of
we
give you. Yeah. Okay. So Karn is now an artificial planeswalker. So what does he do? Karn creates Argentum, which is a plane of mathematical perfection. Sounds pretty nice to me. So he sent probes to monitor Dominaria, but one of them was flawed and became known as the Mirari. Looking out upon the worlds, he found nothing but greed and death. Unfortunate, depressing things. Blind still as he was to the beauty of the worlds he found. So he's, again, kind of just focusing on the negative. Once again, Karn fell into a depression and stagnated upon his plane. He was jarred from this malaise by the arrival of Corona, the false god, upon Argentum, his own created world. And he introduced himself as Lord Mocked. So Corona, after being defeated, or I should say after Corona was defeated, Karn took the Mirari to Argentum and actually turned the orb into another golem. This golem's name was Memnarch, and left to wander the multiverse with Jessica. So he leaves Memnarch on his created plane of Argentum, thinking, you know, oh, okay, here's my creation. He's going to rule. He'll make sure everything's going well. I'll be back later. So, unfortunately, some of the glistening oil that Karn left behind caused him to leave traces of it on the planes that he visited, including Argentum. When Memnarch came into contact with this glistening oil, he decided to turn Argentum into the plane of Mirrodin, a metallic plane with its own ecosystem designed to transform Memnarch into a planeswalker. So he's like, all right, Karn, see ya. I'm going to now make this world make me an ultimately powerful being. So millennia later, Karn returned to Argentum, now Mirrodin, created by the insane Memnarch. Much to his surprise, he found himself locked out of his own plane and barely able to pierce the veil Memnarch had unwittingly placed around it. With his abilities limited, he sent dreams to the planeswalker Glissa Sunseeker. Eventually...
Whoa. She wasn't a planeswalker yet. Her spark hadn't ignited.
Oh, the nascent planeswalker. There you go. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, eventually, Memnarch fell, and so did the veil he made. Karn turned Memnarch back into the Mirari and left it in the care of Glissa, Slobad, and Geth, other prominent names throughout magic lore that we may cover in a future episode.
There's quite a story to tell there, because essentially at some point, one of those three turns evil. All right. So next we move on to the time rifts that happened on Dominaria. So 300 years after the events of the Phyrexian invasion of Dominaria, Karn returns at the request of Joyra to aid her in sealing the time rifts. If you remember this is the Joyra card that has the ability to suspend any card.
Yes.
Yeah, so good. So Karn travels back in time to accomplish it during the invasion itself when Baron obliterated Talaria. And at that time, a corruption began to take hold of his mind. Sensing this, Karn proceeded to planeswalk through the blind eternities so he would not be followed across the multiverse, protecting any foolish enough to follow him from a monster of his own creation.
Man, this guy just likes trying to isolate himself in order to save others.
Well, he is a pacifist.
He is. And, I mean, he's got the shoulders to support it. So, gosh, mentally and physically, this guy is just, he's a beast. So, all right. After the events of Time Spiral, Karn retreated back to Mirrodin's core, where he was worshipped as the father of new machines. When Phyrexia grew upon Mirrodin from the Scars of Mirrodin block, later New Phyrexia, Karn was trapped in his own mind, battling between himself and the role the Phyrexians were trying to force upon him. Shayholdred, one of the praetors on New Phyrexia, told a Mirren spy to kill Karn so she could take his place. The dark oil leaked from Karn's heart, changing his silver body as he sat upon the throne. while the Phyrexian praetors and their minions vied over him, each trying to use him to further their own causes, Karn had a moment of clarity. He sent out a mechanical guide to lead Venser and his party to the fully corrupted core of the plane once called Mirrodin. So in comes Venser, his last call for help. And after many hardships, they found the golem in really bad shape at the center of his own tainted world. So the Silvok outcast, Malira, told Venser and his party that the oil only turns a being into a full Phyrexian if his heart is fully corrupted. And by the time Venser reached Karn in the core of Mirrodin, it was already too late. Malira cleansed the golem's body of the Phyrexian taint, but she couldn't cleanse his heart. That sounds just, you know, too little, too late. But, Venser, knowing his own life would soon be forfeit due to his increasing affliction symptoms, I'm assuming from the thysis, from the Phyrexian oil he'd encountered, Venser made the ultimate sacrifice. With his last remaining mana, he gave his life and spark to Karn. Moments later, Karn was released from the Phyrexian tyranny and mourned the loss of his friend briefly, but turned to battle the Phyrexians, stating he still has a lot of work ahead of him. And you can see this new and improved Karn on his Planeswalker card, Karn Liberated. Finally freed from the Phyrexian presence within him, he is ready to fight to save his world and his friends.
Yeah.
So Karn's storyline continues on through the lore of today. We will more than likely, hopefully, see him as we continue on throughout Magic's storyline. Maybe in Dominaria, maybe with a return to New Phyrexia. Who knows? But
it'll be an interesting one to see.
Yes. Karn's definitely a fan favorite among a lot of Magic players out there.
Yeah, he is. And what is... I have my favorite card that represents him being Karn Silver Golem. Because that card is just way too good. The ability to turn any artifact into a dude is strong. Especially when they equip like a Sword of Feast and Famine to their general to swing in pro against you. And you go, that artifact's a dude and can't be equipped anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Or there's a wrath and you need to get rid of an artifact, it does it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, heck, you could turn, you know, that sword into a creature and bolt it, and all of a sudden there's no more sword.
Or turn that Darksteel Citadel into a dude and then it would die because it has no CMC.
The Dark Steel Citadel into a dude, target non-creature. Oh, wow. I never thought of that. That's interesting. That goes for all the artifact lands.
It sure does.
Oh, wow. That's
crazy.
You
know what else it goes for?
Huh?
Moxen.
Moxen, absolutely. Tap one, kill your Moxen. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah. So, why don't you tell us the stats on him, too?
So, Karn Silver Golem is a 5-drop, 4/4, legendary artifact creature, and since he is a pacifist, whenever he blocks or becomes blocked, he gets -4/+4 until end of turn, so he becomes a 0/8. And then his second ability is for one colorless, generic colorless, could be anything, target non-creature artifact becomes an artifact creature with power and toughness each equal to the converted mana cost until end of turn.
Nice. And I'll go ahead and read his Planeswalker card here. We have an all-star in the modern Tron decks. We have Karn Liberated. For 7 generic mana, you get a 6 loyalty Planeswalker Karn that has a +4 ability. Target player exiles a card from his or her hand. He has a -3 exile target permanent. And then for the low cost of -14, you restart the game, leaving in exile all non-aura permanent cards exiled with Karn Liberated. Then put those cards onto the battlefield under your control.
Is that like time traveling?
I think that is like time traveling, but he can.
Nice.
Because he's silver.
Yeah. Kind of special.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, really, really awesome character. Very strong. and plays a huge part in the history and lore of magic. We'll leave our lore corner here and hopefully revisit this soon, because Dominaria will be coming. Obviously, we have Rivals of Ixalan coming in January, but everybody is hyped for our return to Dominaria coming up early next year.
No, not at all.
No, 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 no. What am I talking about?
I'm not excited for that.
Yeah. Okay, well, moving right along, we got to see some art thanks to Ultra Pro and the products that they are putting out. Some art from Rivals of Ixalan brought to us. Greg, why don't you talk a little bit about some of this art that we see here and what it might mean?
Well, we're going to start with the art from the playmats first, because I think they look really sweet. Going from the top, I think we found this on Gathering Magic. Mm-hmm. And we've got the art of a three-headed dinosaur. Now, I believe this could be an evolved form of Gishoth, thus being him being an avatar already. Probably has something to do with the primal power of the Immortal Sun being released back onto the land, which could transform him into this three-headed version. I mean, it's kind of a dream, but that's kind of my thought.
Right. Are we going to see a dinosaur with triple strike, Greg?
No.
No. No, we're going to leave that in the unset for now. But definitely in the last edition of the story from Ixalan, as the city was emerging, they were hearing these insanely loud and scary primal roars. So one can only assume that either Gishath is evolving, or we've got some new blood in some of these newer dinosaurs, like the Black Elder dinosaur.
Tetzamok or Galta.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the city has been disturbed, and its protectors are sent forth, we think.
Yeah. We wonder and see. So what's that second art there?
The second art here looks to be a depiction of Admiral Beckett Brass commanding her brazen coalition here. At least the hat looks very familiar, but just really, really sweet art. You see just a crew of these rowdy pirates looking like they're about to board another ship. As she, you know, thrusts her sword out in front of her and commands, you know, every one of these pirates to just jump and plunder and fight. Really, really awesome. And I love how the pirate theme of this set is not losing steam as we pass from one set to the next.
It's kind of exciting. And then the last artwork is kind of a landscape playmat, and it depicts a couple dinosaurs. This could be looking out over a valley in Ixalan. Just kind of a peaceful, serene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got some long-necked dinosaurs walking around, kind of minding their business, traveling as a herd. And then, below those playmats, we see art for sleeves. The first bit of art here, we have a merfolk, it appears. Mm-hmm. Now, this could be anybody. It could be Kumena. I know we didn't really see too much of him in the cards of Ixalan. We definitely got a Kapala and a Tishana, but maybe we're going to see Kumena in Rivals of Ixalan.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, this art is really, really, really cool. And he's got, looks like, these blades, one in each hand. So yeah, he might actually be a bit more aggressive of a merfolk. I mean, I would want to say that if he has, you know, the abilities that he has, would probably
be... Oh, come on. We don't need more aggressive merfolk to play with.
No. But I could see him doing something to the effect of, like, whenever he attacks, all other attacking merfolk get, like, a +1/+1 bonus or something like that.
That's really good.
Could be pretty gnarly. I mean, we didn't really get a merfolk lord. I mean, we don't really need more of those, but, you know, Kapala definitely did the don't touch my merfolk thing. Tishana did the, you know, we got lots of dudes, you're going to draw a lot of cards and have no maximum hand size thing. And in Kumena, in the story, he was much more the aggressor, passionate, you know, throw caution to the wind kind of person.
What if he's blue-red?
Oh, don't mess with me on the blue-red front. I mean, you've got, what was that? There was a Razor Fin something or other, that one merfolk that pinged for a blue and a red, so it's not out of the question, but oh my gosh. Yeah, so.
Or what if it's blue-black?
Oh, it could be. Oh, black merfolk. Ooh.
We've had that. The last one was Sig.
We have. We've had white merfolk, too.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem white.
No, no. Kumena definitely either seems blue-red, possibly. Maybe blue-black, but...
Hey, he's greedy.
He is. He's greedy, he's very impulsive, and very strong.
Power at any cost, man.
Power at any cost, yep. Who knows what he does after he socks Tashana as they see the ships approaching, heading towards the Golden City. But anyway... We digress. Let's move on, Greg. Why don't you take us through
the next,
artwork one.
Everybody's speculating to be Saint Elenda. Yes, that's right. The very progenitor of the vampires on Ixalan. She's still alive.
Yep.
Well, we knew she was still alive. We just didn't know what she was up to. And a lot of people are kind of speculating on when she gets to see what's going on with the vampires that she created, will she be happy?
Yeah.
Tune in soon to find out more.
We're on Elenda Watch 2017.
No, whoa. Elenda Watch 2018.
2018, that's
2017,
right.
You know that,
oh my
right?
gosh, yep. We're almost done with this year.
It's so weird.
Do you think Elenda we're going to see here would be a planeswalker or a legendary creature?
I think it's going to be a legendary creature for sure.
Okay.
And I think she's going to kill Vona.
Really?
Just a speculation. Based on what Wizards said in that story piece where they were talking about the burning questions of Ixalan, one of the things when they brought up St. Elenda was she may not be too happy with what's going on with the Order of Dusk?
Legion of Dusk.
Legion of Dusk. She may not be too happy with the Legion of Dusk anymore. Yeah. And Vona is definitely one of those people that is a bit fanatical.
Right, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that there are vampires of varying volition going around Ixalan. You've got your Mavren Fanes who are, you know, highly pious and religious. Now, granted, they are vampires and they can get a bit frisky, but you've got them, and then you've also got ones like, Vona, who are just, you know, no rules, no holds barred. I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna take over.
But that's the problem, because that is definitely not what St. Elenda had envisioned for the Legion of Dusk.
Right.
That's right. Why I thought that. Anyhow, that's my speculation.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. And then this last one, we have an art depicting Herlune Minotaur from the revised edition of Magic the Gathering. Just a simple 2/3 red Minotaur creature. No, I'm kidding. This is Angrath. He is... definitely got, you know, a lot to say about what's going on in Ixalan here. I don't think we've actually officially sort of covered what his deal is, but it has been...
We do know he is a family man.
He is.
And he has two kids that he left.
Yep, and he actually, he spends vacation traveling to different planes and bringing back gifts for his daughters. And it just so happened, you know, through a stroke of bad luck, he ended up on Ixalan, where he was unable to leave.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ixalan's binding. So, I mean, as a dad, if I were to go away and not be able to return and my family didn't know what was going on, I would get pretty ticked off. So, you can imagine. And it's very, very interesting to see his interaction with Whatley, because he's obviously an enraged dude. I mean, the guy is going to be black and red. But he shows sort of a side of him that could be considered, like, you know, good and compassionate. So he's not aggressive towards Whatley. He wants to work with her. So be very, very excited to see how this shapes out in the story with Angrath, the pirate Minotaur.
And then there was one other spoiler card that we got.
Oh, yeah, spoiler cards. Who doesn't like spoiler cards?
I don't.
Yeah, you do. Stop it.
Yeah, I do.
or wait. Before we go to the actual cards, we can see the packaging for Rivals of Ixalan product here. You get the 5 artworks for the booster packs.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely can see Angrath on one of them. And then it looks to be... Looks like there's a warrior of the Sun Empire.
Yeah, I think it's just a normal dude there. I don't think it's going to be anything too special.
Right, right. And then it looks like you've got a merfolk. That could be Kumena. I don't know.
No, that is definitely a different artwork than the other one. It could be one of the other heralds of the Nine Rivers.
Oh, it could be. Absolutely, it could be. Oh, that would be exciting if we saw more than just the regular 3 merfolk that we heard of in the lore in the first story.
Mm-hmm. But could you imagine 9 legendary merfolk in 2 blocks?
Oof, my gosh. I mean, yeah, I can imagine. I don't know if I could get behind that, but geez. and then you got a dinosaur here. Kind of reminds me of a Dilophosaurus from Jurassic Park. You've got the feathers coming out of the neck, mm-hmm. and he's spitting probably some sort of a harmful substance.
Poison,
possibly. Acid, maybe. And then you've got, I think this is Vona on the last one.
I don't think it is.
Okay, well, it's a vampire in golden armor. And, okay, we'll leave it at that. It's a vampire in golden armor. So that's, you know, can lead to any more speculation about who would be involved in the story and whatnot. But, and then I don't think we've actually talked about this before. Actually, okay, yeah. So now we're going to go into some spoiler cards here. Greg, why don't you kick us off?
Evolving Wilds gets another reprint.
Boom. Drop the mic. I mean, wow, signed, sealed, delivered. This is ground shaking.
Why? Yeah. But I did like your idea of the fact that each of the Evolving Wilds embraces a different type of land type. So it makes some sense, I guess, maybe to have 5.
Right.
6. Right. But yep. The more important spoiler for Rivals of Ixalan is Vona's Hunger.
Yes.
Yeah, the 2 generic black instant with a new keyword. What's that keyword?
The keyword is ascend. And the reminder text here states, if you control 10 or more permanents, you get the city's blessing for the rest of the game. And you can see the city's blessing here. It a lot of people are likening it to the monarch mechanic. Mm-hmm. However, the city's blessing here does not have any ability text on it. It's just flavor text.
Right. But Vona's Hunger does a lot of stuff. So by itself, if you don't have the 10 permanents, it says each opponent sacrifices a creature. It's
right.
Good. Maybe not the best, but on a 3-drop instant, it does a lot. But if you have the city's blessing, instead each opponent sacrifices half the creatures he or she controls rounded up. Now, I was thinking about this in the kind of idea in Standard. You get somebody in the red deck wins where they've got 4 dudes on the board swinging at you, and you cast this, and you're like, okay, get rid of half of them.
True.
That's only 2 dudes swinging now.
Yep.
But I liked your idea better.
Yeah, and you know, like you were saying with the idea of red deck wins, it's like, well, if they're swinging at you with, you know, Hazoret and some other creatures, if they've got like 4 or 5 creatures out there and you cast Vona's Hunger, they're going to be able to decide which ones they sacrifice. Now, they probably won't want to sacrifice their Hazoret or any of their other bigger creatures, like maybe a Eternalized Earthshaker Kenra, but this definitely puts the brakes on your opponent when they're going to make their decision and they say, okay, well, I'm crashing in with all these dudes. I left these dudes back to block. So if I do sacrifice these blockers, I'll be left open next turn for a crackback, maybe if they throw down some hasty creatures or something like that. So, and it is an instant, which actually does make this quite a bit more powerful at second glance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, your Teemer energy decks, your Ramunap red decks, your Sultai energy decks, they're going to have boards with, you know, rogue refiners, probably a scarab god, probably a long tusk cub or two or three. If you have that ascend, that's the big thing here, I think, Greg, is if you have that ascend, this card becomes a whole heck of a lot better.
Agreed.
It's black, so you're going to have to figure out how to run black, a black deck that will give you those 10 permanents.
I don't think it's that hard.
Yeah, lands count. So, you know, if you've got those 5 lands and 5 permanents, then you could get there. I think that this, again, sort of goes along with the idea that we had of maybe a Grixis treasure deck.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Wow. I mean, didn't think of that. But, yeah, it can totally work with those treasure producing cards.
I mean, it sounds a little wonky here, but, you know, in Grixis, you've got quite a few cheap control spells. Obviously, you've got Fatal Push. Now you have, you know, Lightning Strike.
What do you think about this in Black-White Aristocrats?
Black-White
Aristocrats. Stockpile.
Yeah, Hidden Stockpile, something like Oketra's Monument. Anything like that? Yeah, definitely. You know what? I'm very surprised. I haven't seen anybody really take to town that... remember the animation module, Metallic Mimic combo people were talking about? Where you could have a Metallic Mimic out, and with your animation module, you would put a 1-1 counter on a servo when it entered, and you could just tap one and create a ton of these then 2-2 servo tokens. The fact that there still is, what's that mechanic where you can tap artifacts to, is it Inspire?
No, Improvise.
Improvise, thank you. The fact that there is Improvise, there's treasure tokens, there's the artifact, the 3-drop artifact that gives other things Improvise. There's so much potential for a deck that can spam artifacts, and especially with the prevalence of treasure tokens, we may see Spell Swindle actually do some work, you know, create some treasure tokens. We may see a deck that could actually win with Revelant Riches. I don't know, but the thought of it is very, very intriguing, and I think somebody might actually come up with one given some of these new toys we're getting here. And we haven't even seen most of the cards from Rivals of Ixalan. We've barely seen any. So it can only get better.
Yeah, pretty much. Then moving on, there were a couple other neat things that we got. Along with playing Magic, there are judges that run Magic and make sure that we have a safe play space to play.
Right.
Well, most of them. So, in doing so, they become a part of the Exemplar program where other judges recognize them for their merits and what they're doing. And in doing so, they get judge promos.
Yes.
And we got 2 judge promos that they announced for next year. One being Pendlehaven, used in the Legacy Infect deck, which is a legendary land that taps to add a green, or taps to make a 1/1 creature get +1/+2 until end of turn.
Right.
Pretty good.
Now, is Pendlehaven, I want to say it was reprinted in Time Spiral?
You are correct. It was a time-shifted card in Time Spiral.
So it is modern legal as well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's in both of them, but I think it's more prevalent in the older sets, but it could be in both.
Right. Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that second one is probably your favorite.
Oh, God, yes. I think this art is so sweet. We get Spellskite as a judge promo. So Spellskite, for 2 generic mana, you get a 0/4 artifact horror. And it has the wonderful, lovely ability of pay a Phyrexian blue, which is 1 blue or 2 life. And you can redirect to Spellskite pretty much anything that targets. So target spell or ability. Now, Spellskite saw its time in the sun during the prevalence of Splinter Twin when it was legal in Modern. Mm-hmm. Because everybody who knew that, you know, Splinter Twin would be running around, you just drop your Spellskite and they couldn't win. They would have to kill your Spellskite first because you would just redirect the Splinter Twin aura to the Spellskite. So that, you know, while it got banned and Spellskite's kind of seen a downtick in popularity, it still is an incredibly powerful card. And I'm honestly a little surprised that not more people are running it in sideboards, just because there's a ton of removal out there. And, you know, you might have some decks that have important creatures that you want to keep around. I mean, this thing eats lightning bolts for breakfast. You know, it's
yeah,
just like,
it does.
Pay two, redirect the three damage. It's still alive. And it seems really, really good. So I think this is a great way to get the word out again about Spellskite and maybe get some people brewing and see if we can get a resurgence of old Spellskite again.
It'd be nice. I mean, the card's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been very curious, if you're running any kind of Kiki Jiki deck, the thought about using Kiki Jiki on a Spellskite to redirect something, because you know it's going to go away anyway, just seems really strong. Kind of janky, kind of dirtily, but still, that seems like something that I could get behind.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Possibly, yeah. It's not a bad way to do stuff. I think there's other cards that would be better.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Then that's true. I mean, you could just win the game with a Pestermite or the blue Phyrexian thing. I can't think of the name right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as long as you have a Spellskite out on the battlefield, that honestly becomes your opponent's priority number one. Like,
yeah.
They have to get rid of the Spellskite before they can get rid of any other threats on your board with anything that targets a creature. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're done with these judge promos, Greg, I kind of want to rewind a little bit here and go back.
Oh.
I clicked this button that flips the city's blessing
over.
Yeah. And on the reverse side, there's a 0/1 elemental token creature. And the text on this card reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this creature and return target card named Rekindling Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste until end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't seen Rekindling Phoenix yet, but we have seen a steady stream of Phoenixes that have come through the, come through the mix. Not all of them have been that impressive. I think Chandra's Phoenix was probably one of the most prevalent ones in competitive play. But we have the name of a card that's going to be in this set, and we just don't know what it does yet. I find that to be very interesting. 0/1 elemental creature tokens.
And that'll be February's promo.
That will be.
Yeah.
That will be, yep. And we do live in an era with Anointed Procession. So if you're able to fill your graveyard with those phoenixes, get multiple elementals, and then bring them all out at the same time, boom! No, I don't know.
Gosh.
I know.
Cathartic Reunion getting played? What?
I know, right? This is going to be a very interesting standard season we have coming up, because... You know, with Rivals of Ixalan, you'll have the Kaladesh block, the Amonkhet block, and the Ixalan block, all legal. Now, when Dominaria comes out, is that going to be a core set?
No.
Okay.
Core sets are July still.
Okay, so that will be its own entity. And with the arrival of Dominaria, I'd have to assume that we would lose the Kaladesh block.
I believe so, yeah.
Thank God. Get that energy out of my face. Yeah.
I think we're all tired of seeing energy in standard.
Yep. Let's see some diversity. Let's see some inventiveness. Let's see some ingenuity here.
Wait. Are you talking about inventors now?
Inventors. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, Greg. I see what you did there. Why don't you tell us? Why don't you tell us why the word inventors switched your little button there?
Oh, well, it's the end of the dual decks. I know. This is usually a sad story. But it's the ascendancy of another. So we're going to get our last
dual
deck.
The mechanic?
Maybe. but we're going to get our last dual deck sometime next year. I think they gave us a date that I didn't read. And that's going to be Elves versus Inventors.
Why?
Why? Why is it our last one, or why Elves versus
Inventors?
No,
why Elves versus Inventors?
Well, because they just made Goblins versus Merfolk, and they wanted to go out with a bang and have Elves also get the last one because of the fact that the first dual deck was Elves versus Goblins.
Okay. All right. All right. I mean, there were no Elves on Kaladesh, save
Nissa. Yeah,
there
were.
But
there's the High Spire Arzens. There was definitely Elves on Kaladesh.
There were?
Kaladesh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I stand corrected.
They did all the life works, the life crafters. The life crafters were all elves.
Okay, that's right. I got you. Ovaya Pashiri, wasn't she an elf too?
No, she was a human.
Oh, she was a human. Never mind. I'm just going to stop talking about Kaladesh. I don't know anything about Kaladesh.
That's because you hated it.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true. Except for all the fun artifacts, the non-energy producing artifacts that were really, really sweet.
So what we're going to go to is then with the advent of them losing the dual decks, they're going to start making the challenger decks.
Yes.
Which are going to be essentially replacements to event decks, but it'll be stronger.
Right.
And we get more information when they tell it to us. Because as it is right now, they aren't talking much about it.
They'd better title these articles, "Here Comes a New Challenger."
A new challenger arrives.
Exactly.
Hopefully it doesn't blow up.
No.
So,
all right.
Kind of exciting, kind of not exciting because we're losing stuff, but hey, what are you going to do?
Right, and also, I think Gavin Verhey said about these challenger decks that they're going to be out of the box, ready to take and compete at Friday Night Magic events. You have a 75-card deck, so a 60-card main board, 15-card sideboard, and in terms of power level of these decks, he said that they are not going to pull any punches. So
well,
I know that...
I mean, even with the event decks, they're supposed to be played right out of the box, but the fact that they only had a few rares in it made it kind of hard to play. Now, are they going to make it where they're going to play with play sets of rares that they need? Because the event decks felt like you need to get four of them to make a good deck.
Right, yeah. And, well, they did put a Verdant Catacombs in one of those old event decks.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but still, you got one. If you're trying to go up against Standard, you needed four Verdant Catacombs, so you still bought four of them.
Right. So, and they said that there's at least two Mythics in each of these decks.
Two Mythics.
So,
I don't know.
So if you were to take Ramunap Red, for example, right?
Two Hazorets?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, what else would they put in there? Because if they're going to mimic these competitive decks, you know, unless they kind of neuter it down a little bit and maybe put in a Combat Celebrant instead, that could be a little problematic. Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of powerful, but if they're not pulling any punches, then you're talking, yeah, Hazoret and Chandra are like your two big mythics from Ramunap Red. So that would be very interesting.
We'll wait to see.
Yeah, we'll wait to see. Because if you do put the expensive cards in these decks, it will crash the prices for the secondary market. Some people think that will lower consumer confidence, but ultimately, Wizards is trying to get people out to play more at these Friday Night Magic events. And
yes.
I don't know. Like you said, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that they need to do a good mix of powerful cards as well as enough to give them room to build upon these decks with, you know, buying more cards. Because you don't want to buy a deck and not have to buy anything else to expand on it. You know, that would kind of counterintuitive for Wizards
yes.
to do selling product, right?
Well, what I think it's going to end up being is that they're going to design a challenger deck that's going to be able to defeat whatever the mainstay deck in Standard's going to be, but it's not going to have the flexibility to deal with other decks.
Okay. Okay, I can.
Because then,
that.
Then they could definitely not pull punches, make a really good deck, but it just can't deal with everything. So it allows some playability for the player to go out and get other stuff.
Right, right. So it's like if they were to make just a generic blue-black control deck that was tuned against the current meta, you're probably not going to see a Scarab God in there.
I mean, you might. Could you imagine like a blue-white deck with Solemnity?
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, Approach of the Second Sun doesn't cost that much money. You could probably build one of those decks relatively easily. But I mean, if these are these challenger decks meant for newer players? Because Approach of the Second Sun might not necessarily be the most intuitive deck to hand somebody who's never played Magic.
It's an interesting. They didn't say who they're making it for. So.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well. Greg, that kind of brings us up to the end of our episode here.
Does it? Did we time out again?
No, not yet. But we better get out before we do.
Okay.
Wanted to take one other opportunity to let everybody know that you can still head over to Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com and order your Magic singles, order your sealed product, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off of your purchase of $10 or more, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. We'll probably be starting up another one of those pretty soon. Yeah. Now,
wasn't there something you wanted to allude to a possible changeup next year?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, we can kind of touch on that here. So in the interest of, we love doing this podcast, and we thank all of you for listening every single week. But what we wanted to do was kind of trim it up a little bit, make it a little bit cleaner for easier presentation. So that you kind of know what you're going to expect out of our podcast each and every week. Mm-hmm. So without giving away too much, we might talk about this a little bit more next episode. But we're going to close the book on 2017. It was an amazing year, amazing first year of doing this podcast. But we're going to look to evolve as we move forward. And 2018 is going to hold some new ideas, some new insight, and some new layouts for our future podcast episodes. So thank you all so very much for listening. Thanks for sending emails. Thanks for tweeting at us. Thanks for following us on Instagram. We just became active on Podbean. So if you use Podbean to look at your or to get your podcast, you can find us there too. And of course, we're available on MTGcast, Shout Engine, Apple iTunes, what else? SoundCloud, YouTube, and we're going to be getting some more YouTube content going up here pretty soon. I think we're actually going to finally play our undecks against each other here.
Yeah.
See if we can cut that and put that up for you. But we're trying to grow, and we want you guys to be with us as we grow. Feel free to drop us a line about anything at all. We appreciate it.
Hopefully it's Magic related.
Hopefully it's Magic. It doesn't have to be. I mean, you can ask Greg personal questions. That's fine. I don't mind about that.
Oh, man, that's awkward.
Oh, man. All right. Well, if you want to get awkward with Greg, how can they find you?
You can find me at NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
You can find me at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. You can follow us on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. You can find us on YouTube. We'll put our link in the show notes. You can find us on
everything.
You can email us, thewincondition podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, all that being said, thank you again.
Thank you.
And we will talk to y'all next week.